All right, we are now on the record. Good morning. I'm Susan Drummond, City of Kirkland, hearing examiner pro tem. Today is May 16, 2024, Thursday morning, 9:30 a.m. We are here today for a public hearing on the Evergreen Health Campus Master Plan. This is a Process 2A application, which the hearing examiner approves if it is consistent with the criteria in the Kirkland Municipal and Zoning Codes, specifically 150.65.3. And that requires consistency with the development regulations. And if there's not an applicable development regulation, which usually is not the case, but the comp plan, there's also a criterion for consistency with the public health, safety, and welfare. And typically, for most projects, if a project's consistent with the development regulations, that criterion is also met, but it is a separate criterion requiring separate findings and conclusions. My decision on this must be issued within 8 days of the close of the hearing. Unless there's agreement with the applicant and department to extend that deadline. And my decision is final unless it is appealed to the council. This is a quasi-judicial proceeding, and that just means it's somewhat formal. So when you testify, I will swear you in, and I will also formally admit exhibits. And in terms of the exhibits that I have received so far, I have received the staff report and attachments 1 through 19. There was a slight error in kind of the transmission of the ARBIS report, so I received an updated version of that this morning. I am somewhat familiar with the site, having been there before, but I will be doing a site visit as well. That's not evidence, but it provides context for the evidence that I do receive. In terms of the order of today's proceedings, I'll hear first from the planning department or applicant. Sometimes on these master plan proposals, the applicant will proceed first, and that's fine. After the planning department and applicant conclude, we'll move to public testimony. I don't know how many of you are here from the public to testify. Okay, looks like we've got one hand raised in the back there, but there may be others. And whether if you're online, this is we're proceeding both in person and online. So if there are individuals online who would like to testify, they may do so. Typically, I'll set timelines for public comment of about 3 to 5 minutes. Sounds like we may have a little bit of flexibility on that this morning, but generally I do limit comment to roughly that time frame so we can proceed efficiently on this. And then once public comment concludes, if the applicant wishes to provide any clarifications, there will be an opportunity to do that. The planning department or myself may have questions. Before we begin, are there any procedural questions from either the public, applicant, or planning department?
Yeah, just one thing. We have decided that the applicant will go first and then staff fall in.
Okay, that is fine. I think what I'll do, I don't know how many, it looks like the applicant comprises a good bit of the audience today. If you are going to testify this morning, I'm going to go ahead and just swear everyone in at once. And that would include members of the public, applicant, and then also from the planning department. If you're an attorney and just providing kind of introductory remarks or legal argument, no need to swear you in. So if all of you who plan to testify could raise your right hand. Do you all swear or affirm to tell the truth under penalty of perjury under the laws of the state of Washington? If so, please say yes. Okay, I did not hear any no's on that, so I trust all of you are sworn in and will be truthful in your testimony today. So I think with that, we will turn to the applicant. Who is presenting first from the applicant? Okay. And if you could, once you come up to the stand, if you could state your name once more and then spell your last name, just so I've got it correctly.
Good morning. My name is Dr. Ettore Palazzo, the CEO of Evergreen Health, and my last name is spelled P-A-L-A-Z-Z-O.
Thank you. You may proceed when you are ready.
Thank you. We're getting the slides up now. I Well, good morning. Again, I'm Dr. Ettore Palazzo, the new Chief Executive Officer at Evergreen Health. I am new to the role, but not new to the organization, having served for 21 years there, resident of Kirkland, and practicing physician for many years there as well. I want to thank Mr. Ullman, as well as the City of Kirkland, for this opportunity to present our master facility plan, our campus master facility plan for our hearing today. I know a lot of work went into this on both sides. I'm joined by a number of members of the Evergreen Health team, as well as our partners from NBBJ, who will be presenting in a little bit as well. And we won't go through all the folks that are here, but a special thank you to Garrett Buckingham, our Director of Design and Construction. We also have members of our Board of Commission here, including our Board Chair, Commissioner Virgil Snyder. So appreciate their presence as well. So 50 years plus ago, the community came together and said, we want healthcare local here in Kirkland and in the district. And the King County Public Hospital District number 2 was formed. And a lot has happened in 52 years, but one thing hasn't, and that's our mission. And this title of the slide says it all. We exist for one purpose, and we understand that at Evergreen Health, we're here for our patients. We're here to provide the very best care that we can for them. And our mission is as strong as it's ever been. Compassionate, high quality, safe, cost-effective healthcare is everything we do. The foundation of it is listed here with the vision statement, which I won't repeat, but also our values of passion, respect, excellence, and accountability. And all of that in the 52 years has been put to the test, but no more so than the last 4 years as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. And I'm proud to share with the city that we are accomplishing this mission better than ever. A top 50 hospital, various publicly reported rankings for safety and quality that put us in the very top of the country. We're proud of that and proud to know that we can always do it better than that. And we strive to achieve that. Some data points, which are fun to share about Evergreen Health, King County Public Hospital District number 2. Last year, this is data from 2023, we welcomed almost 4,500 babies into the world. That is the second most deliveries of any hospital in the state. 16,000 plus inpatient admissions at Evergreen, and our work does not stop at the walls of the hospital. We have, as listed down below, a very robust post-acute care service and division that provides home care services to our community so that the needs that they have for their health after they leave the hospital, after they leave our clinics are there. 446,000 plus hospital outpatient visits. We are here for any emergency or urgent need that the community has with 2 emergency departments, 8 urgent care centers as well. We're proud of bringing folks into the world. We're proud of supporting public health and their health through their life, but also really important is end of life care. And hospice is an important part of the work we do as well with both home hospice services, as well as a 15-bed hospice care center on campus where we care for individuals at an important time and their families in life. We have 1,200 medical staff members. With that, about 390, a little more than that, are actually employed as part of our medical group, and they practice in our primary cares, of which there are 12, and our specialty practices, of which there are 40. We can't do this excellent care alone. We have partnerships. Fred Hutch Cancer Center, world-class cancer services, are here on campus at Evergreen, providing cancer services with us, and partnerships through the Eastside Health Alliance with Overlake and other partners through our clinically integrated network through the Eastside Health Alliance are important parts of what we're doing to provide care on the east side. And even though we serve an area larger than Kirkland, we're really proud that Kirkland is home, and we are the largest employer here in Kirkland. We take that seriously and the duties that come with that. A number of our medical staff members, as well as employees, live here in Kirkland. You can see the data before you here. Kirkland residents, 640 plus, had their babies delivered at Evergreen last year. And many of those same residents also received home care services and admissions for inpatient care at Evergreen, almost 2,500. The emergency room is here for the needs of Kirkland residents, and 9,000 plus visited our ER and received emergency care and sometimes life-saving care. Primary care, specialty care, you can see the numbers of Kirkland residents that are served, 13,000 plus on the primary care side, 14,000 plus in our specialty care. And we know what it means to be a size that we are in a city like, a special city like Kirkland, and the economic impact. And you can see the data there, the estimate at 3 million in purchases to Kirkland businesses take place as a result of our presence here. We take being a community hospital seriously and a public hospital district. The investment from 50 years ago of the community saying we want healthcare local, we look and find ways to make sure that we support the community beyond just providing great healthcare. You can see in the green box here that nearly $50,000 last year annually and beyond have been occurring to support Kirkland programs across all age groups, arts, schools, chamber activities, wellness programs, and really focusing also on vulnerable populations. So what's driving the need for growth? A lot of this data on the slide should not be surprising to anyone in the room. The district itself, which goes beyond Kirkland, our entire district, has increased 29% since we built our last tower in 2007. Occupancy figures, we're going to talk a little bit about that in the next slide, which is really important. But we are above the optimal occupancy levels that the Department of Health says are important for us to try to achieve to be efficient and provide the very best care. Again, we'll see a slide in a moment to see what exactly those figures look like. And coming into this, Washington State is at a little bit of a deficit, and not a little bit. Washington has the fewest number of beds per capita of any hospital beds of any state in the country. So as we see our growing aging population and the needs, there's no question as we consolidate all these points that access will be an issue. It is an issue now, and it's constrained. And as growth happens, it will continue to be a challenge. We okay? All right, I lost my ability to advance. I wonder if I need to, there we go. Thanks. So busy slide, but again, focusing on this concept of occupancy, a lot of percentages are listed on here. The one that I'd really like you to focus on, it's listed in the upper bullet point, is that 70% mark. 70% hospital bed occupancy is what the Department of Health says is the most efficient figure to work towards, to have those throughput needs, ideal length of stays for our patients, the ideal ability to provide care in the right spot so we don't have patients boarding in an emergency room or other areas while they're waiting to get upstairs to their regular bed. And you can see in 2022, Evergreen Health averaged well above that 70% mark at 83%. And 98% of our days were above the targeted occupancy. That's a significant issue, and we are very, very pleased and grateful to the Department of Health to have additional beds added last year. Those were used, or I should say we were able to use decommissioned beds to increase that that bed capacity. But even with that, the goal of getting closer to the 70% is pretty far from where we'd like to be. I draw your attention to the table on the bottom right, and you can see 2022 on the middle column, 2023 on the far right column, and the difference with the addition of those beds going from 261 medical surgical beds in 2022 to 297 starting in July of 2023. So while we did make a little dent with noon average occupancy going from 83% down to 80, still a far cry from the 70% range, and definitely well above the target occupancy for those days above 80% and even above 90%. All right, maybe one more click on the screen and I'll be able to advance. There we go. So what else is driving this need for growth here at Evergreen in Kirkland? And it really speaks to the facilities themselves and the evolution of care. So models always change. They've changed over the 52 years that we've been in existence, but there is definitely an increase in moving from inpatient to outpatient services, which are good for our patients. It's efficient. That cost-effective aspect of what we talk about in our mission is an important part of that. But that means different types of facilities to provide those services in an outpatient setting, particularly when we think about procedures and need for surgical suites. The age of our current buildings are absolutely an important factor that we need to consider. We all know what kind of seismic region we live in and what that might mean for aging buildings. And so also, if we're going to use some of the existing buildings, the ability to use the technology that we need to in existing buildings is a challenge. And then need for new spaces. There's substantial growth projections, both here locally for the patients that are coming, but also for the kind of services that we want to be able to provide to remain a top 50 hospital in the country. And so that ties into the facility. So modernization to meet that future demand, as you see coalesced on the right box here. And note also the commercial payers, the insurance companies are really pushing that drive to outpatient procedures, again, related to what we're all trying to do to affect healthcare costs. But many of our spaces can't appropriately accommodate the new technology that's needed or the new standards that are required of us by the Department of Health and others. Here's a footprint of our current campus here, and we have highlighted some of our older areas and buildings. Some have dates by them. The original 1972 building built in the 70s, what we describe as purple and green and affectionately old red, that came in 1985, are certainly areas where important patient care is happening and service being provided. But there are seismic issues with these areas and, of course, our central garage as well. And so as we look to what this means and where we need to make sure that we have vital care if there is an event, a pandemic, another one, hopefully not in our generation, but or a large earthquake or any other scenario, we want to make sure that our facilities are standing and usable to provide that care to our community. We'll wrap my part with this objective slide that really just speaks to, you know, what our goals are here. We want to be able to be here for the community, provide the access that we know is coming, that's needed, both from an inpatient standpoint, intensive care, as well as our ambulatory footprint. Readiness for things like pandemics, very proud of how the organization came forward during the COVID-19 pandemic. That will not be our last one in the history of this organization, and we want to be ready. And it's not just that. Earthquakes, mass casualty events, other emergencies, we are wanting to be here and ready for the community if and when those things happen. We ascribe to a concept of HRO, high reliability organization philosophy at Evergreen Health, and the tenet of that is being proactive rather than reactive. We always know we're reacting to the scenarios around us, but this plan and what we're looking at is being proactive for what we believe are the needs of the community in the decades to come. We always are mindful of environmental impact, energy efficiency, of course, the seismic resiliency that we already talked about. And of course, very important is being a good partner, a good neighbor, a good tenant here in Kirkland. So with that, I think we will go ahead and hand over to our partners at NBBJ, unless there's specific questions for my part at the moment.
I do not have any questions at this point, so thank you for your presentation, Dr. Palazzo.
Hello, everyone. My name is Molly Wolf. I'm a healthcare director and an architect with NBBJ, and I've been leading the master plan effort with Evergreen Health for the past couple of years, navigating all these growth needs that were just discussed and how we translate that into space. So I'm going to start.
Ms. Wolf, before you, can I just get you to spell your name?
Oh, W-O-L-F.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Molly, is that L-L-Y or?
Yes, okay. Correct. All right. So I believe city staff is going to get into some of the details of the land use details of the master plan proposal. But what we're going to do today is give you an overview of the development projects that are included within the master plan. We're going to start with the goals, and that really dovetails with the objectives that were just reviewed. But really, the goals of this master plan were to provide a development roadmap for the city and for Evergreen Health to meet their growth demands for the next 10 years. It provides a framework and some detail for how they can continue to support the community with their patient care on campus. So a little bit of campus context. You can see the campus here. Evergreen Health is within the Totem Lake neighborhood. The designation TL3 is specifically for Evergreen Health use. There is no other use that happens under that zoning designation. The campus is comprised of 5 different sub areas within the TL3 zone. And you can see them listed out there and they're labeled throughout the master plan. And as I mentioned, this will outline development for 10 years. So this gives you a little bit of context of some of the surrounding zones. There is the Totem Lake Urban Village just down the hill and some residential developments to the north and east. The master plan, although you see in this diagram, the orange is new and or proposed, and the white is what is existing on campus today. And although there are several boxes, this master plan is really comprised of 3 major development projects. The first of which is the North Tower expansion, and you can see those highlighted here. That includes a major addition to the inpatient beds in the hospital, and it takes down part of the existing facility and connects in. The what's called the CUP, it's actually a central utility plant that provides some of the infrastructure required to provide services to the hospital. And then, of course, an expansion of the parking garage to support the development. Then there is a medical office building proposed in TL3B that would be adjacent to the existing DeYoung Pavilion. This was previously planned and discussed and is actually a part of, it's like phase two of that development that exists there today. And the third is a surgery center and medical office building in, proposed in the TL3C portion of campus. You will also notice that there is an optional medical office building development site proposed in the master plan. This would be in lieu of a development in the TL3B location, and it just provides some flexibility for Evergreen Health down the road if for some reason their services need to be adjacent to the emergency room or there is some compelling reason that that development needs to be in a different location on their campus. It's not an additional building. It would be one or the other. Within the master plan, there is a cap of development square footage proposed. So we are proposing to add approximately 500,000 square feet to campus. That includes some demolition and some new building. And it's all detailed here. And you can see we've linked those developments to the projects that were the proposed increase, we have linked the proposed increase in square footage with the development projects that were previously described. And this details some of the existing square footage. And what we want to call out is in the previous master plan, Evergreen Health worked to build a larger building than they needed at that moment and build out over time. And they were very successful in that strategy. And there's just about 70,000 square feet remaining in the existing capacity that they have built out over the last 10 years. So we have taken that into consideration and it is included in those projections. So I'm going to get into a little bit of detail about each of these developments. But we won't cover all the points and we can come back for any questions. So I'm going to start with the North Tower expansion. This is in the main super block of campus in the TL3A zone. So you can see the three proposed developments that were outlined earlier. It does add approximately 324,000 square feet to campus. We have the new central plant, the North Tower addition, and the parking garage. The proposed height in this zone is 150 feet. We'll go to this next one. This shows a bit more detail about those proposed developments. It is approximately a 10-story development that could go up to 150 feet. Once the Evergreen Health is in the design, they'll refine the massing and shaping of this and do some further view analysis. But this is what the master plan zoning would allow. It does connect into that building and it takes down what was referred to as Old Red, one of those seismically problematic buildings that they have on campus. And it connects with the existing emergency department and would marry up with that entrance to the building. And you can see off to the right, the proposed central utility plant. This is the utility plant. We have talked about access to this. There is a proposed new access off of 120th to access the central plant. This really would be for maintenance vehicles or occasional deliveries. This isn't something that people come to often. It would be service vehicles to get to the central plant facility. And the parking garage. This is actually a vertical and horizontal addition to the central parking garage to provide the parking needed to support the new tower development. So we will add one story to the existing garage to make it the same height as the northern portion. And then we will add another addition to that. So it reconfigures some surface lots and some landscaping that exists there today. Then I will move on to the medical office building proposed as development two. This is approximately 78,000 square feet. And as I mentioned before, this was a planned development. So this building would be built on top of existing structured parking that was built in anticipation of a medical office building of this size. So that parking exists today to serve this additional square footage. No additional parking would be needed to support this. The allowable height in this zone is up to 150, but this building would be far below that. You can see the massing here. We're proposing up to 75 feet. And it replaces existing surface parking on that garage. And last, the proposed surgery center and medical office building in TL3C. This is just shy of 150,000 square feet with its own structured parking stalls, mostly below grade, but some above grade on the surface, to support this surgery center. As Dr. Palazzo mentioned, there is a growing need for procedures to take place outside of the hospital environment. This is a patient care concern for the community. It provides ease of access and helps free up some congestion within their existing hospital campus. So there will be some procedural space, but also just general medical office clinic space in this building. This would operate during normal business hours. This is not a 24/7 facility like a hospital. This is more like business occupancy during normal awake time hours. It is worth noting on this site, there is more complex height restrictions due to the residential adjacency to the north and the east. The height on this site is zoned at 30 feet, but if you are 100 feet away, if you step back 100 feet from those residential property lines to the north and the east, you can go up to 60 feet. So what we've shown here is a development all outside of that 100-foot step back and 60 feet tall. And then last, the alternative development site. So this is in TL3D. There are a couple of office buildings that exist there today. You see them in white. And this would take up an existing surface parking lot that is sometimes used for contractor staging on campus when there is construction activity happening. And as I mentioned previous, this would be in replacement of the medical office building in TL3B. This is zoned up to 65 feet in height and would have access off of 121st. And my final slide here is an overview of campus parking. This diagram and exhibit is provided in the master plan, but it gives an overview of existing structured parking, below grade parking, and surface parking, and contrast that with proposed to show kind of site of service, ease of access for parking to the various buildings on campus. It also diagrams some of the existing access points and proposed access points that will be discussed further as the projects move into the design phases. It is worth noting that the master plan puts a cap on parking for the campus to help promote single occupancy vehicle trip reduction. So we are putting a cap of 4,013 parking stalls on campus, of which 1,491 will be allocated to staff parking and no more than that. And with that, I'm going to hand it over to our transportation engineer to go over some of the transpo info. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Yeah. Wolf. I should note for those of you who are listening online, I do not have access to the chat feature, so cannot receive any evidence that way. But I assume someone over there is monitoring the chat just in case there are any technical issues that arise that need to be fixed. So just wanted to check on that. Yes.
All right.
Good morning. If you could introduce yourself.
Sure. My name is Michael Swenson. Last name is spelled S-W-E-N-S-O-N. And I'm a principal with the Transpo Group located here in Kirkland.
Good morning, Mr. Swenson.
Good morning.
You may proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. As Molly had mentioned, I'm just going to provide kind of a brief overview of the transportation analysis that was conducted for the project and highlight a few elements of the project's mitigation and just a little bit of the methodology that we used to arrive at that. Just kind of some highlights. As Molly mentioned, this has been a multi-year process, which we worked extensively with transportation staff from the city of Kirkland. All of the analysis that has been done complies with city requirements and reflects feedback from staff along the way. Our analysis looked at two different horizon years, kind of shorter year horizon coinciding with phase one, and then the full build out of the campus master plan. We identified offsite mitigation at one intersection, which we'll talk about. And as Molly mentioned, we did an extensive parking analysis that looked at maximum parking for the campus, more specifically allocation for employees driven to minimize single occupancy vehicle travel as part of that analysis. And then ultimately, an updated transportation management plan has been prepared, approved, and signed by all parties at this point. And I'll touch on that plan as well. So first, in terms of the study area, City of Kirkland has a specific criteria based on kind of proportionate share, if you will, of which intersections are triggered for the analysis. The slide on the left shows the offsite intersections that have been studied. The slide on the right identifies all of the campus driveways that were also studied in the analysis. So it's a very extensive study area for both offsite and onsite access points. Trip generation distribution, the table is consistent with what was in the transportation study. It's up here for reference. The thing I would point you to is just the overall methodology used to establish the rates are based on actual counts conducted at Evergreen Health. Looking at going back to all these different driveways that are on the right, traffic counts were done over a multi-day period to assess the trips for the campus. Those rates were then applied to the future areas that are identified in the master plan. The one thing I would note is, although the TMP does define a more aggressive SOV target, our trip generation was not adjusted to reflect that. So while the goal of the campus through parking management TMP is to reduce the trips, the traffic analysis that was done is conservative because it assumes that it continues at the same rate. So we do that just to make sure that we're not missing an impact offsite. But the goals through both the parking management plan and the TMP is to reduce campus demands. The distribution patterns itself come from the city in terms of their modeling, and that's how we assign the project trips. I mentioned two horizon years. So we looked at a 2029 for kind of phase one and a 2033 conditions for that analysis. We look at background growth rates just in general. We include other development projects in the area that may not be generating traffic but have been approved. In the case of this site, we've also incorporated traffic shifts associated with the new interchange at 132nd because those were not in the traffic counts. Since that just opened up, that has been reflected in our accounts as well. We look at both AM and PM peak hours. So it's the 7 to 9 and 4 to 6 time periods. And as I mentioned, we had mitigation at one intersection that was identified. That intersection is 120th and 128th. That's shown up on the screen highlighted there on the aerial. This is the intersection that has the fifth leg that comes, that feeds the transit center. This improvement that we've identified here is some signal modifications to allow for protected permitted phasing. It requires a new signal head and a pole. Some pretty extensive improvements, but the phasing is identified and the change in phasing is in response to the traffic generated by the master plan. For context, the results are shown on the bottom, but this is also in the traffic study itself. We have parking supply cap of 4013 that's shown on the fourth column on the very bottom, the 4013 spaces. With that parking based on current rates, we're showing a campus utilization of 92%. We had a lot of conversations with the city around the parking management plan. What we have identified is actually an allocation of employee parking that is less than what it is today in terms of percentage. And the goal of that and the reason for that is we want to drive down the employee SOV rates. And one of the ways you do that is to limit availability of parking. So it's that coupled with incentives that are identified in the TMP is the intent and hope that that will reduce that SOV number to more in line with what the Totem Lake neighborhood plan has assumed. Let's see, the last part. There is, as I mentioned, there is a parking management plan, which, and the requirements do, I should say the parking management plan requires that for each of the projects, implementing projects that are identified in the MIMP or in the master plan, that a updated parking study is done of each one of those studies to verify the adequacy of the parking, just to make sure that we are not providing too little or too much along the way. So there's check-ins at each of those points. I mentioned the transportation management plan. So this is an updated plan. It supersedes the plan that currently adopted. It identifies an employee SOV rate of 70%. And there's a 70% target, and then there's a 64% aspirational goal, if you will. Those are both values that have been identified in the Totem Lake neighborhood plan. The TMP identifies strategies. So this includes parking management and enforcement, as well as other incentives to encourage non-SOV travel. And that's through subsidies, transit subsidies, incentives, other programs that Evergreen Health has initiated. It is important to note that the TMP applies really to the employees of Evergreen Health. It is not something that is transferred to guests, visitors, and patients, which is why when we look at the parking rate, what has been managed, if you will, is the employee side of the parking supply. We are not necessarily capped, if you will, directly guests, visitors, and patients of Evergreen Health. And that is it from the transportation side.
Thank you, Mr. Swenson. Yeah. Is there anyone else for the applicant? Nope. Okay, we'll turn to the planning department then.
Katie, can we open the comments from the Zoom meeting? I just want to see if there's anything to be addressed right now. Oops.
Should be a button at the bottom of the screen if you exit the share, sharing of the PowerPoint. I can't press it on mine, but I can see that. were not technical issues that were kind of. On those screens, so you can, so I don't know if that's what you're trying to do. You can get to the one that has the magic button. This PowerPoint. Over there. That one. And then the other. And then, wow, you guys have a lot of PowerPoints. We've got it. Okay.
Yeah. Can we just click on the Q&A?
Yeah. If you can go into stop share probably is helpful, but the Q&A down here on the, These are questions. And so how we'll handle substantive questions. I cannot receive these through the chat feature because I don't have access to the chat feature and there's not a way to record those. So for those of you listening online who have questions, hold those questions. And then when we get to public comment as part of your testimony, you can go ahead and raise those questions. And then once the public testimony portion finishes, the applicant or planning department can address those questions. So I think that would be the most efficient way to deal with that. And then with regard to the applicant's PowerPoint, if I can have that forwarded to me and we'll make that part of the record. So that is admitted. All right. I think we sorted those issues.
All right. Great.
You could state your name for the record and then proceed.
Tony Levitt, Planning Department, TONY, last name LEAVIV as in Victor, ITT.
Thank you.
Okay. Great. All right, great. So yes, we are here to discuss. Let me go back. There we go. Okay, great. Again, we are here for the Evergreen Hospital Master Plan. I thought I would go over real briefly a kind of campus history. I know the applicant did that a little bit, but as far as the hospital was opened in 1972. In July of 1990, the City Council approved a master plan for the campus. A subsequent master plan was adopted in 2003. This was based on the zoning regulations that this council had adopted in October of 2002. This set forth the zoning regulations, including maximum building area, trip generation, height limits, and lot coverage. The building square footage that was established in the 2003 master plan is being exceeded by the proposed master plan, which thus requires the new process. The conditions of approval included lapse of approval extensions that were available for the project. The plan director extended the master plan expiration multiple times, and three extensions resulted in the lapse of approval date extending to June 15th of 2017. In 2017, Evergreen submitted a minor modification for the existing campus master plan. The new lapse of approval for the master plan extended it to June 15th of 2026. So the required elements that are to be incorporated into the master plan include the following. There's a requirement for a conceptual site plan, which shows the approximate location and size of all known and potential future development, an estimate of the trip generation based on the project uses and trip rate approved by the city, a proposed phasing plan for development of the campus describing the improvements for each phase, proposed sub-area elements, including uses and development regulations, establishment of design guidelines and review process for all projects, inclusion of a transportation management plan, submittal of an arborist report and tree retention plan to address retention of significant trees, and finally, the appropriate review process for modifications of the master plan and a lapse of approval date. So the first element that was required, again, was the conceptual site plan. The applicant has already provided an overview of this, so I'll move on to my next slide. The second part is the traffic trip generation. Again, Mike Swenson provided an overview of this, including the SEPA determination, which required mitigation of the traffic-related impacts to the Northeast 128th, 120th Avenue intersection. The mitigations included modifications to the traffic signal at the intersection that will help to improve the intersection's level of service. The next element is the phasing plan for each of the projects. Phase one is, as proposed in the master plan, would be the build out of the existing square footage. Phase two would be between 2027 and 2030. Will include the construction of the North Inpatient Tower, the MOB Surgery Center, Centro Utility Plant, and the parking garage addition expansion. Phase three will include the construction of the medical office building between 2030 and 2034. It should be noted this plan could change as the building design proceeds forward. The third piece is the master plan is required to show all the sub areas and specific development elements that apply to each sub area. The applicant has addressed each of these elements noted on the slide. I will now go into analysis of each of the elements. The first element is proposed use. The applicant is proposing the continuation of the hospital medical outpatient facility and ancillary uses, including food services, retail sales, offices, and daycare. That use is allowed in each of the TL3 sub areas. Additionally, the applicant is proposing the continuation of an office-related parking lot in the TL1B subarea. The next element required to be shown is the setbacks for each of the subareas. The minimum setback is 10 feet with an average building setback of 15 feet from perimeter campus property lines and street right-of-ways. A minimum 20-foot setback is required where a campus property abuts residential zones. The master plan shows this for each of the sub areas, and this is an example of how they've done it for the TL3A sub area. The next required sub area element is step backs. The only sub areas that require step backs per the zoning code are TL3A and 3D. In 3A, the step backs are applicable to buildings taller than 75 feet and apply to locations near residential zones and the campus perimeter. The 200-foot distance to residential zones eliminates the need for the stepbacks. Additionally, those stepbacks for the building in TL3A would be looked at as part of the design review process. In TL3D, any building within 50 feet of the residential property to the east is limited to 40 feet in height. The step back requirement was established as part of the 2003 master plan, and the new master plan proposes to continue the requirement. The master plan additionally is required to show areas of buffer and landscaping. The 15-foot landscape buffers are required along any property line that is adjoining a residential use. As noted here, each subarea map shows the buffer and landscape locations and establishment of these areas will occur with subsequent building permits. Building square footage by subarea is another required element. Within subarea TL3A, the proposed master plan includes removal of 50,000 square feet of medical center to accommodate the new North Inpatient Tower, construction of the 324,000 square foot North Inpatient Tower and build out of the 7,717 square feet of existing shell space. Subarea 3B includes the 78,000 square foot mob building, and subarea 3C proposes the 148,000 square foot medical office building surgery center. In total, the master plan will add 500,000 square feet of new floor area. The lot coverage for the site is proposed to be 62%, well below the maximum of 85%. Each building permit application will need to show compliance with this requirement. And finally, the next required element is open and green space. The sub-area site plans show these areas, including the existing park that is located within sub-area 3B. The existing proposed vehicle and pedestrian access points are shown on these maps in order to comply with the required master plan elements. The final design and location of these vehicular access points and pedestrian connections will need to be reviewed as part of the building permit applications for each of the projects. This was touched on by Mike Swenson, but I'll go over a little bit too. The required number of parking spaces is required to be established as part of the master plan. They submitted a parking demand study. That study determined that the need for the campus was 4,013 parking stalls, which would be an addition of 1,011 parking stalls to the existing 3,002. The map here shows the locations of those existing and proposed parking areas. The TMP also identified a condition that the master plan should not build more than 4,013 parking stalls, of which no more than 1,491 parking spaces should be allocated to employee parking. In regard to lighting elements, all side lighting will be required to comply with the applicable zoning requirements in Chapter 115. One of the key elements of the master plan is the establishment of heights for each of the proposed buildings. In the TL3A subarea, heights are limited to 75 feet above average building elevation. In specific locations within the subarea, heights can be increased to 175 feet based on the considerations for shadowing, transitions, lighting, step back, and view impacts. The proposed master plan seeks to allow this increased height limits for the north inpatient tower. The applicant has submitted an analysis to address the criteria to allow the additional height. This analysis looked at the potential shadowing impacts of the tower on residential properties to the east, northeast, and territorial views from the surrounding public streets. The portion of the proposed tower that exceeds 75 feet will be approximately 200 feet from the residential zones to property to the east, northeast, along 130th Lane. This is the only residential property that could be impacted by the proposed tower. The shadow analysis looked at the impacts of the proposed tower on this property. The analysis looked at shading impacts during the summer solstice, fall and spring equinoxes, and the winter solstice. The shadow analysis also compared the potential impact cast by the North Tower compared to those shadows cast by existing buildings and landscaping. The analysis shows that the shadows would extend to the residential property for approximately 3 hours during all seasons, except during the summer. Additionally, the analysis found that the existing trees along Northeast 130th Lane currently cast shadows on the adjacent residential units. The shadow comparison analysis concluded that the tower does not significantly change the access to light for the residential properties to the east. At 3 p.m. on the winter solstice, the existing building and landscaping cast shadows on the residential property, and the tower will not change the solar access in the late afternoons of winter. At 4 p.m. during the fall or spring equinox, the tower would cast a slight shadow on the closest residential units. Additionally, there was a review analysis submitted for this project. The video analysis shows no impacts to the current territorial views from the public street looking west from 130th Lane. The existing view is blocked by current vegetation along this street frontage, that is shown on the left there. The view analysis does show a minimal impact to the existing territorial view at the intersection of Northeast 130th and 124th east of the tower. That's the view on the right. At this location, a small portion of the northernmost portion of the building, approximately two stories, plus the rooftop appearances are visible looking west. Staff concluded, based on these on this analysis, the impacts of the proposed tower territorial views are minimal and may not be an issue when proposed tower is anticipated to be constructed in 2029. This would be due to growth of the trees that are along this right of way, and additionally to the potential development in the area to the east, which could allow structures up to 160 feet. Staff recommends that the views be reanalyzed when the project comes in for review by the design review board. In the TL3A subarea, heights are limited to 75 feet above average building elevation. The proposed medical office building complies with these building height requirements. In TL3C, heights are limited to 30 feet above average building elevation. Building heights may be increased up to 60 feet above ABE in the portions of the area that are located more than 100 feet from the residential zones, based on the extent to which the increased buildings would have impacts on the surrounding residential zones. Proposed methods for mitigating such impacts, as determined by analysis of shadowing, transition, lighting impacts, must be provided. The applicant in this case has provided, again, a shadow analysis to address the criteria. The graphic on the left is just kind of to show the section views of the area and the projects that are located to the east. I'm sorry, to the east, yes, and north of the proposed building. On the right-hand side is the shadow analysis. The analysis looked at the impacts of the proposed building on properties to the north and east. The analysis looked at the shading impacts during the summer solstice, fall and spring equinoxes, and the winter solstice. The analysis concluded that shading impacts the properties would only be during the winter. Additionally, the shadow analysis addressed the shadow impacts on the property to the north and determined that the proposed building will have similar impacts as a building constructed 30 feet tall at 20 feet from the north property line. The property to the east includes a large row of trees that are on their property that would create shadows on the property per the analysis. The shadow impacts of the proposed building, which would be 60 feet tall and 100 feet from the north and east property lines on the residential property to the north when compared to a building at 30 feet tall, will not create a significant impact on the neighboring property as concluded by staff. Impacts to the property to the east are minimized by the existing trees that are on that property. In the TL3D subarea, heights are limited to 65 feet. Buildings must be stepped back from the adjacent residential zone to the east. Again, as I mentioned before, the 2003 master plan required that any buildings within 50 feet of the residential properties to the east be limited to 40 feet above ABE. The proposed medical office building is proposed to be 65 feet above ABE and would be at least 50 feet from the residential property to the east. As part of the design review board application, the proposed medical office building project must comply with the guidelines to create a transition in bulk and scale between the proposed building and the residential uses to the east. The zoning code also requires that the master plan project be reviewed. All projects within the master plan be reviewed by the city's design review board. Each of the projects, as noted, would require that review. The master plan includes a campus character and design section. The section includes design objectives and design guidelines that will be used by the design review board when the project comes before them. The master plan is also required to include a transportation management plan. The goal of the TMP is to reduce single occupancy trips for employees. Key elements of the TMP include program promotion and education to employees led by a building transportation coordinator, site improvements, including bicycle parking and locker room facilities, financial incentives and subsidies for van pools and carpools and transit, flex time, telecommuting, compressed work week schedules for employees, a guaranteed ride home for employees, and finally, a parking management plan that limits the number of overall parking stalls and the number of stalls for employees. The condition placed on the TMP is that within 30 days of the approved TMP, the applicant is required to submit the signed TMP to the city and start implementation of the TMP. As part of the master plan, retention of significant trees is a key component. The code requires that tree retention focus on high retention value trees. Those are trees that are located in groves, landmark trees and viable trees in required yards, landscape buffers and or common space, and moderate retention value trees, which is a tree that is not a retention, high retention value tree. The applicant has submitted an arborist report prepared by a certified arborist and a tree retention plan. Their arborist report provided a tree inventory of all trees that would be impacted by the proposed projects. The report also included a general area of disturbance plan for each project, as the final design of the project has not been, the projects has not been completed. The city's urban forester reviewed the tree inventory and plan. The review noted the on-site high retention value trees. Landmark trees and tree groves were identified in the proposed building areas. The code states that in order to retain landmark trees and tree groves, the applicant shall consider, and the planning official is authorized to require, site plan alterations, arboricultural methods, or variation to development standards. As a condition, staff is requiring that within 30 days approval of the master plan, the applicant should submit revisions to the subarea maps to include callouts for landmark and tree groves. The callouts should state that the additional tree retention plan per review pursuant to the tree retention plan standards in Chapter 1 and Chapter 95 should occur with subsequent design review process for each of the buildings. The zoning code also requires that the master plan establish the review process for new structures, minor modifications, and major modifications. The master plan requires that all of the proposed structures be subject to design review requirements of Kirkland Zoning Code Chapter 142, including review by the Design Review Board. The master plan minor modifications, including modifications of the development standards other than the building height and lot coverage and changes in project description and phasing, are subject to the requirements of Kirkland Zoning Code Section 150-45, which would be reviewed by the planning director. A major modification of the master plan would be required to increase the amount of building square space above 1,575,245 million square feet. Total building area excluding parking garages, increasing the total trips to over 21,434 average daily trips or 1,527 p.m. peak trips. So this would, any of those, going over any of those thresholds would require a major modification and a new master plan. Additionally, any increases in the height, building height limits or lot coverage beyond those standards would require that. The effective period for the master plan approval shall not be more than 10 years from the date of the hearing examiner approval. The applicant can seek an extension to the expiration date by submitting a request to the planning director. All construction is required to be consistent with the zoning and building codes in effect at the time of construction, regardless of the duration of the master plan, except for those code provisions that have been superseded or modified by the development standards, including the approved master plan. So to conclude, based on the facts and conclusions that are contained in our staff advisory report, staff is recommending approval of the proposed master plan subject to all the conditions that are outlined in the staff report.
Thank you, Mr. Lovett. If you can be sure to forward the PowerPoint to me, and that is admitted into the record.
Yes, will do.
Thank you. Anything further from staff before we proceed to public comment?
No.
All right. So at this point, we'll proceed to public comment. I'll just go ahead and defer to, it's like we have at least a couple members present in the hearing room who'd like to testify. For those of you online, we'll We'll call up the folks who are in person, and then we'll move to those who are online for comment.
Just one thing before we get into that. Yes. I did get three comment emails that I'd like to submit into the record.
Are you able to print those or?
Yes, I haven't printed.
Oh, you can. Okay. All right. Okay. So
I'll print them and then I can send you digital versions.
Okay. That works. So just for the note, it looks like we've a little unusual to submit it that way, but if we've got the capability, that's great. So the three comments that were submitted, we'll go ahead and accept those into the record because we do have printing capability, sounds like. So, all right. Good morning. I swore you in earlier.
Yes. My name is Jane Boyajian, B-O-Y-A-J-I-A-N.
Thank you. You may proceed when you are ready.
Thank you, Ms. Drummond. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. Given the fact that that you are a hearing examiner and we're at a particular stage in the decision-making process, I'm putting away the notes that I wrote because I think I want to speak more informally to the fact that you said that you had not been to the site.
Oh, I'm familiar with the site. I will be doing a site-specific visit for this, but I have been to the site several times.
Well, my comments, I guess, will be tailored a little bit to introduction from the street view of that site. I first want to say that I am speaking on my own behalf. I'm a resident and owner of Jade Condominiums, which is on 128th, about a little over 100 condo units. Next door is the Bower, a large rental property. And those are the primary congregate facilities in that vicinity, just south of the campus. I'm speaking on my own behalf. However, I would also say that my comments will echo the concerns of many of the residents. I haven't taken a poll of them, but enough of them. I would say that the first thing you should probably know is that the people at the Jade, many of whom rely on Revigreen for its healthcare service, nobody is opposed to change, nobody is opposed to growth, and nobody is opposed to the health improvement facilities needed there, especially the hospice, because many of us are older. But many of the people in the building are also young people who are getting out to work every morning. And that's the point I want to talk about. Getting out of our condos now is a challenge at rush hour and return at the end of the day. At the beginning of the day, it's usually a dash to the west, trying to get either to the past the transit center on the left, to the I-405 corridor, or onto Kirkland, and to the right, it is a decision about how you're going to get to. You can't get through the village very well anymore because the lane is very narrow. So many people take the roads already through around the campus, Evergreen campus, and that's a thoroughfare. So some of the concerns we have are during the construction process and not at the end point. During the construction process, it's already difficult to get out of our area safely. The adding of the trucks and the construction workers and their parking where they are going to park and all of those concerns will complicate that situation. It's almost like I try not to get my blood pressure taken after I try to get out of my the parking area, because it's such a stressful left turn. On the right, it's just difficult to get through. I watch pedestrians holding hands together. Why they do, I'm not quite sure, mid-block, trying to cross by running across the block. That's what's happening now. It doesn't happen every day. It happens enough, so we're worrying about that. And the question is the one traffic light that's being planned. Is that sufficient for the situation? Post building, which is 10 years away, so all the interim in between. The concern about the drive of the hospital to to limit single occupancy by limiting parking tells me that immediately translated, on-street parking or down in the village. The village already at this point is full at capacity at some points, in some points of the day, mainly at lunchtime. So it's not like there's an overflow there. We are not, no one is opposed to change. No one is opposed to a growth of the health facilities around us. No one is opposed to the care with which every, I'm sure every single staff person in the city of Kirkland has given to it. It's just that boots on the ground feels quite different. And so I hope when you go out to look at the site again, that you're with someone who can look with you, as we do, to every hillside around us. You can either see right now huge new facilities, residential facilities being built, and behind each clump of trees on each hill is another series of residential communities being built, all of which are going to be using this area to go to doctors' appointments and so forth during the day, trying to get to the Trader Joe's or whatever. So the question is only this. On paper, one traffic light might look like it would work. The reality on the ground is somewhat different. And as we project into the future with the building around us, it's a big question.
Thank you, Ms. Boyajian. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Yes, it's Dr. Boyajian, yes.
Dr. Boyajian, okay. Can you provide your address or an email in case you want a copy of the decision?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Thank you so much.
Oh, wait. Actually, it might be easier if I get it now and then we have it, or unless you prefer, you can provide it directly to staff. But
Yes.
Okay. As long as we've got your contact information. And you said you lived in Jade Condominiums. Is that correct?
Okay. Unit 618.
Oh, you don't have to tell me that. But yeah, thank you.
All right. Thanks so much.
Yep. All right. Do we have anyone else in the audience who would like to speak this morning? Okay. Let the record reflect there is no one else in the audience who has indicated a wish to speak. We may have some individuals online. If perhaps you could raise your hand, that would indicate if you wish to speak. We have on the attendee side, perhaps one person who has raised their hand. It looks like there's, I don't see a last name, but it looks like Lydia.
Correct.
Yes. Oh, okay. So I'm going to swear you in because I don't know if you were sworn in earlier or not. If you could state your name for the record.
First name is Lydia, L-Y-D-I-A. Last name Rapida, R-A-P as in Paul, I-D as in David, A-H.
Let me just you went a little fast. R-A-P-I-D-A-H. Did I get it?
Correct. Yes, okay. That's correct.
Thank you. All right. And do you swear or affirm to tell the truth under penalty of perjury under the laws of the state of Washington?
Yes.
Thank you. You may proceed when you are ready.
So I have one question and one comment. I am an owner of a condo at the Salish Village, and I believe the proposed surgery center building or the medical office building is going to impact where my condo is currently located. I think my first question is, I understand that the proposed building is gonna be about 60 feet high. I'm curious how many floor that is. Sounds like about 4 floors, but I wanna confirm. And my concern are a couple of things. I guess the noise that's going to be impacting the community, especially where that building G is currently located. The view definitely going to be blocked, and privacy, not being able for people to actually look into the units of the condo. Parking, I know it's going to be an underground I'm a little bit concerned about that. In the, again, as we got to the noise, I am not sure whether that's going to be impacting with vibrations every time somebody actually go down to that underground parking. I know that's vibrations and sounds, and I am not sure how that's going to be impacting the community. That is my concern. I would love to be able to get an update as how this is going to be decided.
Thank you, Ms. Rapida. And did I pronounce that correctly?
That's correct. Thank you.
Okay. And does the planning department have your email and or address so a copy of the decision can be provided to you?
I don't think so. But my email address is my first name, last name at yahoo.com. Lydia Rapida at yahoo.com.
Okay, thank you. And you said you lived in, is it Kasala Village? Did I hear that correctly?
No, Salish Village. S-A-L-I-S-H, Salish Village Condominium.
Oh, okay. Got it. Thank you very much. So it sounds like, and just to recap, it sounds like you had two questions on the 60-foot building about how many floors would that
floors.
Be? Floors, yeah.
Yeah.
And then I think correct. You had a follow-up question on building six. You were concerned about noise. Sound like primarily noise with regard to the underground parking. Did I hear that correctly?
Yeah, there's noise with the underground parking, the privacy, which it sounds like if it's a 60-foot, my guess is probably about fourth floor, and that will actually being that building will be taller than the current condo structure. The other one that I forgot to mention is actually the air movement. What I've been in that in this condo locations for more than 15 years, and typically with the air, we get it from this. We have two windows. One is a window from the bedroom, and one is actually a sliding door, which is actually going to be facing this new proposed surgical center. That is the source of where all the air, the fresh air, will come in. My concern is once this building is it's being built, the air movement might be disrupted.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Ms. Rapida.
Thank you.
All right. Is there anyone else online who would like to speak this morning? And if you could raise your hand, if so. All right. I'm not seeing any other raised hands. Am I missing something? Okay. All right, let the record reflect that there is no one else online who has indicated a wish to testify on the proposal. So at this point, we'll turn back to the applicant and planning department. There were a few questions raised during public comment. If the applicant or the department could address those, that might be helpful.
Yeah, I can address the questions from Lydia. So the proposed building.
Just for the record, that's Mr. Levitt who's speaking.
Mr. Levitt, yeah, I'm sorry. the proposed MOB surgery center would be four stories tall. So each of the levels would be 15 feet. There would be requirements. I know there were some concerns about noise impacts and maybe view. So there would be requirements that's one thing the tree retention will focus on when that building comes in for design review would be the retention of there's some pretty large significant trees that are located along that north property line. So the retention plan will focus on retaining more of those trees and also supplementing the trees within that to make sure that there's a pretty extensive landscape buffer to help to screen the proposed building. Additionally, I did want to bring up, they will be each of these projects will be required to go through the design review board process. So as part of that process, Lydia and her neighboring residents would be notified of the design review board process. So they'll have an opportunity to see the final design of the building and provide comments to the design review board as part of that process. So there will be, again, multiple steps along the way before this building is actually built for her and her neighboring residents to provide comments to the city.
Thank you, Mr. Levitt. And then are there anything further from the applicant? All right. So I think at this point, I may keep the record open just in case there are anything else, if there was any difficulty with anyone online speaking. I don't know that we need to do that. Either close the business today, tomorrow at the latest. I think today's Thursday. So maybe just close the business today. That's probably, I think, sufficient on this. So, and that won't change the deadline for my decision. I think the 8 days, Kirkland's one of the shortest, I think, in the state in terms of my turnaround. But I think Friday will be just fine. If not, I'll send an email to the applicant, the planning department on that. But I think Friday will not be an issue. And then, so I email it to the department, and then the department is responsible for sending it out. And so we'll send it to the applicant and then any members of the public who have requested a copy and or provided their contact information for that. So I will take this under advisement. I'll take a look again at the two PowerPoints and also the voluminous record that I have received already. And as noted earlier, I'll be doing a site visit, although I am familiar with that area, but I will drive through it again with having heard everything and with the comments in mind, because that's always helpful in terms of providing some context. So I think before we adjourn, any procedural questions from anyone? Thank you all for your presentations and comments this morning. Really appreciate it. We are adjourned.